apologize for being a little late. Traffic patterns are always changing in this city, it seems. And I didn't expect to be on the road for an hour, well over an hour, for what usually is a 30-minute drive. I'm going to continue. Sunday night, I read from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text 69. And tonight, we'll read from chapter 2, text 70. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram apa pavashanti advat tadvat kama yam pavashanti sarve sashantim apnoti nakama kami. Translation. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled, but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. Purport. Although the vast ocean is always filled with water, it is always, especially during the rainy season, being filled with much more water. But the ocean remains the same, steady, it is not agitated, nor does it cross beyond the limit of its brink. That is also true of a person fixed in Krishna consciousness. As long as one has the material body, the demands of the body for sense gratification will continue. The devotee, however, is not disturbed by such desires because of his fullness. A Krishna-conscious man is not in need of anything because the Lord fulfills all his material necessities. Therefore, he is like the ocean, always full in himself. Desires may come to him like the waters of the rivers that flow into the ocean, but he is steady in his activities and he is not even slightly disturbed by desires for sense gratification. That is the proof of a Krishna-conscious man, one who has lost all inclinations for material sense gratification, although the desires are present. Because he remains satisfied in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, he can remain steady like the ocean and therefore enjoy full peace. Others, however, who want to fulfill desires even up to the limit of liberation, what to speak of material success, never attain peace. The fruitive workers, the salvationists, and also the yogis who are after mystic powers are all unhappy because of unfulfilled desires. But the person in Krishna consciousness is happy in the service of the Lord, and he has no desires to be fulfilled. In fact, he does not even desire liberation from the so-called material bondage. The devotees of Krishna have no material desires, and therefore they are in perfect peace. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram apa pravashanti advat tadvat kama pavishanti sarve sashantim apnoti nakama kami. Person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. Om Jnanati Marandasya Garanjana Salakaya Chaksho Unminitam Yena Tasmai Shigrave Namaha Mukam Koroti Vachalam Pangum Nangayate Garyam Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande Shigurandina Taranam Nama Om Vishnu Pidaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaman Iti Namane Namaste Saraswate Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Sanyavadi Paschachade Satarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Here Krishna is continuing to answer Arjuna's question, which we raised the other night when speaking on verse 69. Arjuna asked, what are the symptoms of a person who's sthita pragya, who's fixed in Krishna consciousness? And in tonight's verse, Krishna is using another analogy. As we said, Prabhupada uses analogies, and Krishna himself also uses analogies. And Krishna is using an analogy to describe the characteristics of a sthita pragya. He compares it to be like the rivers that enter into the ocean. And although the ocean is always filled, still, it is not it does not go beyond its brink, even in the height of the rainy season when so many rivers enter into the ocean. It remains steady. In the same way, the sthita pragya, a devotee who is fixed in Krishna consciousness, he is not affected by the desires which may naturally come in the course of him still being within the body, but he doesn't strive to satisfy those desires, even though they may come. And therefore, he is sthita pragya. He's fixed in Krishna consciousness and undisturbed by those desires. Whereas, as Srila Prabhupada says here, that the person, that a devotee has lost, having all his desires fulfilled by Krishna, he's lost his inclination to pursue sense gratification. Whereas those who are striving to fulfill their desires can never become peaceful. And although Srila Prabhupada did not quote the verse here, Prabhupada spoke in reference to a famous verse, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Atayeva Shanta Bhakti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakali Ashanta, that because a devotee of Lord Krishna is desireless, he can be peaceful, whereas those who are desiring bhakti, those who are desiring bhakti meaning enjoyment, material enjoyment, those who are desiring mukti means those who are aspire for freedom from suffering, liberation. Those who are aspiring for siddhi, meaning those who still have some inclination to achieve some mystic yogic perfections. Bhakti, mukti, siddhi. Kami means that they still have, kami means kama, lust. They still have desires, selfish desires. Sakali, ashanta, and because they have selfish desires, they can never be peaceful. And Prabhupada explains the reason why they cannot be peaceful is because their desires will always remain incompletely fulfilled, unfulfilled. and unfulfilled desires, as long as there's unfulfilled desires. And as we know, as Krishna also explains elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, that desire is the symptom of life. Sometimes people think that those who are frustrated by their desires, they think, let me try to obliterate, to get rid of all desires. But actually, that is very unnatural, because the symptom of life is desire. And as much as we may try to avoid fulfilling our desires, we may try to restrain ourselves from fulfilling desires, the attempt to do so is artificial, because desire is there, is natural. It's a symptom of life, as we said, but the symptom of life means not only the symptom of embodied life, but the symptom of the symptom of the soul beyond this temporary physical body. We oftentimes use an analogy in this connection, very simple analogy, that we oftentimes speak, many times people will speak about necessities of life. And generally, whenever we think of necessities of life, I could ask, what do we think of when we think of necessities of life? Generally, we think of food. It's a necessity of life. Air, it's a necessity of life. Water, if you don't have water for, what to speak of air, but a substantial amount of time, then life can't be sustained without water. That's how we generally think. But actually, we think that way because we think that life is dependent upon meeting the demands of the physical body. So although we may think of air, food, shelter, water as necessities of life, these are necessities for maintaining life in the body, which is natural, and we're not in any way suggesting that we shouldn't pursue that. But it's not the necessities of life. Because life, as Krishna explains to Arjuna in this chapter, we spoke about on Sunday, the ABCs of spiritual life, because life is goes beyond this temporary physical body, therefore, obviously, life has its own necessity independent of maintaining life in the body. Unfortunately, most people are not aware of life's necessities. And therefore, whenever they hear necessities of life, immediately they think, well, I need food, I need a place to stay, I need heat in the middle of the winter, I need so, but these are necessities for maintaining life in the body. So what is life's necessity? Well, there are verses spoken by great sages, spoken by Krishna himself, which suggest that life has a necessity also, which has nothing to do with simply maintaining life within the body. The verse we oftentimes quote is a verse from Govinda Das in his prayer. He says, E dana jovana putra parijana iteki achi parati tire kamala dala jala jivana dalamala bhaja hun hari parini tire. He describes other necessities, wealth, youth, family. He says these are temporary. He said, what is there in it? Just as a drop appears on a lotus leaf, such is this life. So he compares these necessities or as like a drop of appearing on a lotus leaf, that at any moment the drop could fall off the leaf and it's no longer there. So in the same way, he says, therefore, although these temporary things are there, he says, what is there in it? Just as a drop appears on a lotus leaf, such as this life in the body. Therefore, he says, let me take up the worship of Sri Hari, which is the only necessity. So he has a different perspective on what's necessary. He says, yes, these things are there, but they're temporary, but the only necessity, the real necessity, is to understand my connection, my relationship with the Supreme. And Krishna, elsewhere in this chapter, he says that for one who is not connected with the Supreme, he can have neither a controlled mind nor steady intelligence, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? So Krishna again suggests the need for understanding the distinction between connections with temporary objects and connections with him. And because this world is temporary, we tend to look for security by connecting ourselves to temporary objects. And as long as we connect ourselves to temporary objects, then bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kami, sakali, ashanta. That the symptom of life is desire. Those who desire enjoyment of the senses are those who are the bhuktis. Bhuktis, as we spoke on Sunday, it was a very important point, and we highlighted the importance of understanding the difference between I am not this body and who I am. That the muktis, they try to negate their identification with the temporary physical body, which is an asset. But their motivation to negate their identification with the temporary physical body is because they want relief. They want liberation, mukti. So the muktis still have selfish desire. Instead of thinking of bhukti or sense enjoyment, they think, let me enjoy relief. That's still selfish desire. Bhuktis, muktis, those are the liberationists who try to obtain relief by negation of the temporary physical world and try to achieve that status of liberation or complete abnegation of identification with the temporary physical body and mind. But as we explained on Sunday, still that is incomplete. And the result is that although one may perform severe austerities and penances to achieve the highest position by abnegating sense enjoyment, Aruya kuchjena parampatam tata patantyato nadvata yuzmanangriya, as Lord Brahma says in his prayers to Krishna, that such persons who perform such severe austerities and penances, to think what that they are going to achieve the highest position, which is liberation, they fall down from their position of imagined superiority, and Lord Brahma very clearly states, because they failed to connect themselves to you. And because they failed to connect themselves to you, their state of liberation is called vimukti maninas, which is they think they're liberated. Krishna lets them think they're liberated. Krishna lets everybody have what they want. He is the bestower of all benedictions, the fulfiller of all desires. So for those who want liberation, Krishna allows them to achieve it, but they think they're fully liberated, but unless they've actually secured their connection with Krishna, which is a much better way to fulfill the desires, they will fall eventually from that position. And therefore, bhukti, muktis, siddhis are those who aspire for mystic yoga perfections. Therefore, they think through achievement of their different types of perfections, they will gain control, superiority over others, gain control of themselves, and still such mystic powers, if one is not careful, will delude one again in the same way by wanting to enjoy the facility of mystic powers. So again, such desires will be not fulfilled because they won't give permanence to the soul. They're temporary. Anything that is temporary, which cannot give permanence to the eternal soul, is not a permanent shelter or permanent resting place for the living being. And therefore, the verse says, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Ata Eva Shanta, that the devotee of Lord Krishna, he's Nishkama, he has no material desires, and therefore he can be peaceful. What does it mean to have no material desires? This is the secret understood only by the bhakta. The bhakta understands having no material desires is when his life is so fulfilled, like the person, like the ocean, which is so full. And that's why Krishna uses the analogy. His life is so fulfilled, it's already full. So like just like the ocean is full, and even though so many rivers enter it, it remains undisturbed. In the same way, the Krishna Bhakta is already full. How is he full? Because he's not pursuing his own satisfaction, but he's so satisfied because Krishna fulfills all his desires that he doesn't even have to think of his own satisfaction. Imagine. Imagine having that kind of a benefactor who is always thinking of you, and nobody can obstruct his efforts to satisfy you. Well, that's Krishna. Krishna states very clearly when he speaks about those who are only thinking of his pleasure, he states very clearly in many places, but one place, notable place, is in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 9th canto, where Krishna says, the devotee is always in my heart, and I am always in the heart of the devotee. The devotee is someone who is always thinking of me, and reciprocally, I'm always thinking of him. Now, who can make such a claim? Who can make a claim that I'm always thinking of some other person? And what to speak of when he says, my devotee, he's actually referring to many, not one. Anyone who falls into the category of my devotee, those who, he says, who serve me with love and who don't even think of their own personal interests, he's speaking about. So who can satisfy everyone's desires simultaneously and reciprocally and think of them constantly? Well, that is Krishna. And he can even do that from within the heart of every living being. As Krishna says, I'm situated within everyone's heart. From me becomes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. I'm the Kampalade Vedanta, the knower of the Vedas. Krishna is situated within everyone's heart as the Supersoul, and therefore he is the knower of everyone's desires. And he can satisfy everyone's desires. But not only is he situated within the heart of every living being in this world, but Krishna, being omniscient, omnipotent, he is conscious of all living beings. In Bhagavad Gita, he says, I know all living entities, I know their past, I know their present, I know their future. I know everything about them, but for me, it's very difficult. And he says, Naham Prakasha Shavasha, Yoga Maya Samavita. He said, I am covered for them, for those fools, I'm covered by the eternal creative potency, Yogamaya, and so they do not know me. They cannot unknow me. But I know them. I know everything. I know their past, I know their present, and I also know everything that's there within their heart, and therefore I can, knowing what's there in their heart, I can very easily determine what's next for them too. So, and Prabhupada even explains, he compares, he says that just like a person can smell the fragrance of a flower by being near it, in the same way Krishna, who is situated as super soul within the heart, he knows the desires of the living being. He knows exactly what they are desiring, and therefore if they're desiring him, he says, okay, I'll help them to come to me. If they're not desiring him, then he simply serves in the function as the anumanta and upadrashta, which is he's simply the witness, witnessing, like the example is given in the Upanishads of two birds sitting in the tree. One bird is eating the fruits of the tree, and the other bird's watching and waiting. And so in the same way, the soul and the super soul are both situated within the heart of every living being. The soul is like the bird eating the fruits, and the super soul is simply sitting on the branch, watching, waiting for that bird to turn to him. So in the same way, Krishna is situated within the heart as super soul, and he knows the desires the living entity wants fulfilled. And although the living entity may make so many statements, oh Krishna, I want only you, oh Krishna, he may ask for so many things from Krishna, but Krishna knows everything that is there within the heart. And he also knows those who are making the efforts to come to him. And therefore he says, if you make efforts, don't worry. I don't expect you to be sthita pragya. I don't expect you to be completely full in Krishna consciousness. But what I would be very happy to see is that you're making the endeavor to become sthita pragya. Having heard about the glories of those who are sthita pragya, and having heard how inclined I am towards those who are always fixed in service to me, I hope in some way that by their example and by seeing how I reciprocate with them, you may become attracted in some way to try to unlock the mystery of the relationship that everyone can have with me and to understand how I reciprocate. I don't necessarily reciprocate by filling your bank accounts. I reciprocate in a different way to those who want me. In fact, sometimes Krishna even says he may take everything away from your bank accounts. He says that may be possible, although it's stated in other places that he sometimes says, Yasmin, no, that's not it. Yasyaham anugrahami harashe taddanam shanai. He says, when I'm particularly mercifully disposed towards my devotee, I may take everything away from him, so that because he's my devotee, he'll realize I'm still a possessor. You've taken everything away from me, but Krishna, I still have you. And you're most important to me. So sometimes Krishna will put his devotee in that situation. Another name for Krishna is Hari. He takes away. He's the supreme thief. There's a wonderful prayer. A devotee is glorifying the Lord as the supreme thief. And he says in his prayer, he says, oh, great thief, you are so wonderful. You take away everything. He said, but although you've taken away everything, I'm going to punish you because that's usually what happens to thieves. They get punished. So I'm going to punish you, and I'm going to hold you captive in prison in my heart. And I'll never let you go. Oh, supreme thief. This is how a devotee thinks of the Lord. When the devotee understands that the Lord, although he's maybe a thief, the Lord wants to give himself, but he wants to give himself to those who want him. So therefore, sometimes he may be favorably disposed towards somebody and he might take something away from them. And if he takes something away, the devotee may understand, ah, Krishna is so merciful. I still have him. And therefore, the devotee says, okay, I'll lock you up in the core of my heart and punish you for your thievery. But I'll never let you go. This is your punishment for your thievery. So, of course, such a relationship exists between the sthita pragya, one who's already full, and the Lord. But sometimes the Lord may allow the devotee to keep everything. And Prabhupada even explains in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he says that sometimes Krishna takes everything away, but sometimes he allows the devotees to keep. Or sometimes Krishna even gives great opulence. Just today, actually, I was reading the story of Sudam Brahman, who went with his four palmfuls of flat rice that his wife had given him to take to his friend and to offer to Krishna, because his wife was very concerned that Sudam Brahman was living in such abject poverty that the veins in his body were exposed, and she had nothing to cook for him whatsoever. And she said, you had a friend that you served together in the ashram of your spiritual master. His name is Krishna. Why don't you go to him and ask him? And so because of her persistence, Sudama finally relented and decided to go, although he didn't want anything from him. But he thought, well, because she's pushing so much, I'll take that as an opportunity to see Krishna. So he said, but how can I go empty-handed? So he asked his wife, do we have anything? So she went to the neighbor and she was able to get 4 palmfuls of chipped rice, and she put it in a little cloth, and Sudam took the cloth, torn cloth, tied it around his waist and held those 4 palmfuls of chipped rice. And then he went off to see Krishna, to Dwarka. So, of course, when he appeared in Dwarka, and when Krishna saw him, he received him, and he was so happy to see his childhood friend. And the whole way that while Sudam was going to Dwarka, he was simply absorbed in meditating on Krishna, so happy for getting the opportunity simply to see him, that he even forgot what he was going there for. And then Krishna was so happy to see him that Krishna, because he is Namo Brahmanya Devaya, he's the worshiper of the Brahmins, he immediately accepted Sudam Brahman. He placed him on his bedstead. He began offering him artik and washed his feet and took the water, poured it on his head, and then Sudam Brahman, of course, was feeling totally embarrassed. You know, why is the Lord treating him in this way? But he understood that he had to accept it. And then the Lord knew that Sudam Brahman had come to give him something. So he took those, what have you brought for me? And he understood that Sudam Brahman had this small little parcel of flat rice, and he snatched it from him, and he immediately tasted it and said, this is so satisfying. And he was so satisfied by Sudama Brahman's offering that Rukmini, she was a little concerned, because Krishna was so satisfied, she was fanning him, that she is also known as the goddess of fortune, and she was thinking that being the goddess of fortune, she's going to have to call upon the other goddesses of fortune to provide something in return for what Sudama has brought in his offering to Krishna. When Krishna went for a second morsel, she held his hand and said, stop, I think I won't have enough to provide for this Brahmin if you take more. And then there was no mention whatsoever. Sudama even forgot what he went there for. He was so happy to see the Lord. And then as he was leaving, he was thinking how merciful the Lord was. He didn't even make any mention whatsoever about my as he was leaving when he was walking back, he made no mention whatsoever, didn't talk about it. And then, of course, as we know, as he was returning, he was thinking in this way, that he felt so very fortunate simply to have given an offering to the Lord and simply to have seen the Lord. And then when he arrived at that place, which had previously been his dilapidated hut, in that same place, he saw all these palaces and gardens and waterfalls. And he was shocked, you know, where did it come from? And he said, this must be the wrong place. And then all of a sudden, all the maidservants came out and servants came out. And then he saw his wife come out, and she was dressed in regal opulence. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said that she was in regal opulence, but he was still in his torn clothes. But he said, he explained that Sudam Brahman appeared in that way so that his wife would recognize him. So then she came out and saw her and said, "What has happened?" And Sudam Brahman could immediately understand that the Lord is so kind, he's so merciful, that although I didn't even ask, he has provided all of these things. And there is a commentary, it's a very nice commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I was reading today. He was saying that I only have a few minutes, I'll try to finish this and then bring it back, wrap it up as to how it's connected to the verse. So in the commentary, he was saying that there are two types of renunciates. He said there are those who are completely averse to any form of sense gratification. And those who are completely averse, the Lord reciprocates. He won't give them anything. But because the devotee is so averse to it, the Lord gives himself, but he won't give anything else because the devotee doesn't want it. He doesn't want to disturb the devotee. He said, but there are another type of renunciates, he says, are those who are just indifferent. They don't think about enjoying. They don't think about renouncing. They're just indifferent towards enjoyment. And because they're indifferent, and because, in particular, in Sudam Brahman's case, he didn't want it, but his wife wanted it. But why? And then he realized, but why did his wife want opulence? She wanted opulence because she had nothing to prepare for him, her husband. She also didn't want it for herself. So therefore, the Lord was thinking, let me give them opulence. So he gave them such majestic opulences. And when he came there, but even though he gave them such majestic opulence, when Sudama Brahman saw all the opulence, he entered into the palaces and all these beds, soft sheets and columns made of emeralds and jewels and coral and such beauty. Sudam Brahman still slept on the earth. He wasn't at all attached. He wasn't thinking how to enjoy these things. He remained indifferent. So anyways, that was, the Lord sometimes will give opulence to his devotees. But the devotee is never attached to these things. He simply utilizes everything for the service of the Lord. So the devotee who is full in what Krishna is explaining here, the devotee is so full in his Krishna consciousness that even though maybe some desires may enter like the rivers enter into the ocean, because he is so full in himself, is full in thoughts of Krishna, so satisfied in simply remembering Krishna, so satisfied in simply serving Krishna, therefore, although such desires are there, he is not disturbed. He is peaceful. And Krishna is so kind because that relationship that exists between Krishna and his devotees is so wonderful that the devotee never even has to think of his own satisfaction. He's so happy simply to remember Krishna. Therefore, all his needs are fulfilled. All his necessities are fulfilled. And that is the point that Srila Prabhupada made. Why are all his necessities fulfilled? Because he's satisfied in any condition of life. Just like Shukumbhara Brahmachari, he was Sudama Brahman in another, in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Sudama Brahman, I mean Shukumbhara Brahmachari, he also lived as impoverished. He also offered some rice, or brought had some rice in his bag. The Lord snatched it out of his hand and took it. Shukumbhara Brahmachari is described that although he was so impoverished, he never understood what was the meaning of poverty. He never even thought about it because he was so satisfied. He was never hankering. Brahmabhuta prasanatma na sochati na kankshati. The symptom of one who's self-satisfied, he neither hankers nor laments. He's self-satisfied. He sees Krishna in everything. This is the benefit of becoming full. And our efforts to become full, we should try to at least fill our ears and our minds and thoughts of such narrations about Krishna in relationship with his devotees. And we should chant Krishna's name as he manifests before us as Sri Sri Radha Gopi Vallabha. And now it's time for Artik. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.